Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 462.
This week on the podcast, our favorite guest Grant Sloss joins us with a report from the WGA picket line.
And Clarence Thomas and Harlan Crow. They're just two guys doing what friends do when they have business in front of the Supreme Court.
Plus the debt ceiling, another example of the economy being fake.
And Joe Biden is looking for some soft landings for friends who need to take a hard look at themselves.
Plus, for a man who spent so much time sexually harassing women, Donald Trump seems mighty unclear on what his type is.
And attention Americans, the coronation is none of your business. Please act accordingly.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey y'all, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right. We have our favorite guest back.
That's right.
Grant Sloss, this time as an expert. Not that you're previously when you're here, you're also an expert. Because you're an expert on politics, and that's why we'd like to have you.
I've never been an expert before or now, but thank you for having me.
You're as much of an expert as either Lila
right.
or I.
That's right.
But you were here to talk about the writer's strike because you are an expert at that because you were an actual real-life writer.
And a strike captain.
And a strike captain. And I've been at the gates at Paramount and Raleigh Studios across the street, a little less known, since Tuesday. So Monday night, our negotiating committee had been negotiating for months. Our MBA, which is the minimum basic agreement, and... we were very far apart from the studios on a lot of issues, most of which had made TV and feature writing kind of an untenable job in America, which is an insane thing to say, because it's typically been a very lucrative and prosperous job, or at a minimum, a very good middle class job, and
right.
as Los Angeles
right.
becomes unaffordable to everyone except
well, right.
for
that's
billionaires.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that I think that is often misunderstood about, and you know, like, look, Hollywood likes to like prop itself up as being like all the glitz and glamour and everything, and I think there's like a misunderstanding of people throughout the country that like, oh, you know, these people must be rolling in their, you know, beds of money.
Right.
These Hollywood writers who are just like, you know, rich and famous. And it's like, that's not what's happening here.
No, and some people are, absolutely. But like the vast majority of people in the Writers Guild are middle class to lower now workers. Before we even got on mic, Lila mentioned that her writer friends had day jobs because... these writing jobs are no longer enough to afford living in Los Angeles or afford just like a basic living wage. And the main reason for this, like we haven't struck in 15 years. And that was basically, we struck in 2007, 2008 to get a foothold in what was called new media, which is just streaming.
Just all regular media now.
Right,
right.
And now this is kind of like part two in that we got the foothold in new media. But they've basically reclassified themselves as tech companies and sort of obliterated the old rules of equity and payment. And so suddenly, like, they want everybody to be an Uber driver, essentially, which I think is, like, weirdly the goal of every tech company now is to, like, make somebody a gig worker that they don't have to pay any sort of infrastructure to.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's... bad, for the record.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Right.
Bad across the board. So they've taken what was a very reasonable way to make a living and made it impossible. And so we're on strike. We don't know exactly how long that is going to take. The good news is...
unlike so many strikes.
Right.
Strike only for a brief period of time.
We're going to do two strong weeks and then it's over. No, I think we have to get them back to the table, and the only way to get them back to the table is to make this hurt. And so we've been picketing at every kind of studio in town for the last week. And crucially, the Teamsters are with us this time.
Great.
I think the Teamsters are kind of always with us, but they
the Teamsters are a real union. Like, some unions are not.
Right. The Teamsters are not fucking around.
Yeah.
And they have vowed not to cross a picket line, and that's important because they have... they drive the trucks that have all the equipment that makes shooting this stuff possible. So if they can't cross a picket line, they can't shoot that day. And that's a lot of money lost every time that they can't get onto a lot.
Yeah, I saw. And they're not. And a picket line can be, you know, two guys with a sign also.
Right.
I mean, because I saw what did...
right, a picket line is a feeling.
Right. Because
in addition to being a thing.
Some production recently got shut down that I saw a clip of that I think had like six people at it. But because you've got solidarity... with some of the other unions, they won't cross. And so, you know, it's a fairly large production got shut down just recently because it's people wouldn't cross.
There was a picket line of three guys holding signs, walking in a circle, in like Greenpoint, I think, in New York on Friday night, and they were out there till 1 a.m.
I think this is the one that I saw.
Yeah, and these producers were just like standing there waiting for these guys to go home so that they could tell the crew members they could
like load in. Yeah.
Yeah.
And these guys just refused to go away. And so finally at like 1 a.m. the producer's like, okay, we're not gonna be able to shoot anything, and they called it. And so that production, I think the show was Evil on CBS.
That's what it was.
Ironic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got shut down. Like somebody made a list of the stuff.
Paramount Plus, I think.
Paramount. I'm not acknowledging that. somebody made a list of some of the productions that have been shut down in the last week because of this, and like it was Evil, Billions, American Horror Story. Like if anybody wrote this down,
it's a dystopian nightmare.
They would have been like, no, you can't be that obvious. But guess what? We are. So it's been like really illuminating for me because I'll go to a protest. I'll go to
Who wouldn't go to a protest?
But I've never been on the organizing side of it, and it's a lot of work. Not just logistics, but also keeping people's spirits up, because I think this is going to take a little while.
Yeah.
I think we're talking months, not
I
weeks.
Mean, the one in 07 was what, 100 days?
100
and
days.
Historically, I feel like WGA strikes have gone on for more than 100 days at times.
And it seems like what I know about it, and you can probably go into this in greater detail, but it seems like the last place that y'all left off, you weren't even negotiating like in the same sort of like realm of like the like universe.
Right. One no. side was like, right? Should I mean... AI write things? And the other side was like, no.
That one's mind blowing to me that they're even admitting that they want to leave the door open for AI.
Right.
That,
like, would they suggest like having a monthly meeting about it or something like that?
Yes. A yearly meeting.
Famous government suggestion for just having a meeting where you plan a second meeting is the number one way to get nothing done, but also pretend you're taking action.
We are like racing toward the 30 Rock joke of Transformers 5 written by no one.
Written by no one. Like one of my favorites.
We're just like hurtling toward that at warp speed, and they're still like, we'll just like let's keep talking. That one seemed like a gimme, and they just couldn't give us that. And the rest of them, we were proposing structural changes to the way these things are done because they structurally change the way things are done.
Right.
Seems fair. So that like a lot of these proposals were in television because television is sort of the dominant content model. Sorry for saying content model. It's TV. It's a fucking TV show. Surprisingly, I was told that they looked at the proposals for feature writers and they were like, no, features are fine where they are. We're not doing anything to fix that.
Perfect.
So
carry on.
I feel like feature writers already kind of feel shafted recently just because there's been this sort of the apple cart's been upset and TV's risen to the top. And so what was already kind of difficult for them just became like even more, I think, of a slap in the face. And so I think they're just as fired up as the TV writers are this time around. What was I going to say? I think importantly for this labor strike, the DGA and SAG, who both came to the Writers Guild member meeting on Wednesday night, which was a fucking barn burner, if anybody got to go.
I did see a lot of Twitter action about that. People were hyped after that
meeting. First time in, I think, like 90 years that all the major Hollywood unions were in one room. Oof. The head of the Teamster, it was their like secretary treasurer, but she was their representative, and she's a fucking badass. Love her. Lindsay Doherty is her name. It was her. It was the DGA, SAG, IATSE, and LIUNA, the Laborers Union. Every single one of them got up, gave a speech. Everyone got a standing ovation. It was just like, I think it's because, as you guys have talked about on this podcast plenty of times, but like, in case people haven't realized, like labor is under serious attack in this country. Like I think the tide is turning, seems to be. But it's really been getting squeezed. And I think this is the first big fight we're picking in this particular industry. And I think the rest of the unions are like, well, if we don't do this now, I think it's going to fall on us later.
One of those larger unions, aren't they in negotiations right now or are coming up? Is it the DGA?
The DGA typically goes before the Writers Guild. They stepped aside this year and they pushed their deadline, I think, to June 30th, which is also when SAG's agreement is up.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that feels like a pretty crucial deadline.
Yeah.
We'll, you know, we're looking to that. A lot going on right now.
One thing I wanted to talk about, just for our non-Hollywood audience, about why I think this labor movement, or not the labor movement, the whole movement, but this movement in labor is important, is because I think Hollywood unions represent kinds of jobs that are not what we typically think of as organized labor jobs. So we think of organized labor jobs as being like teachers, right, and, you know, right, municipal workers, and stable 9-to-5 auto workers, 9-to-5 factory jobs with benefits and blah, blah, blah. And that's not really how, you know, people who are working in the entertainment industry conceive of their professional lives or see their professional lives going. Hollywood workers have a lot more in common with gig workers. And because of that, this is like, I think, always been an important model for how we can not just effectively like protect people inside of the entertainment industry, but protect people in emerging tech industries that are relying on these models. This is what it looks like to organize a workforce that operates on a contingent work model a lot of the time. And I, like, you know, I was thinking about this because I had just moved here when the 07 strike happened. I just had my first job in TV and then everyone went on strike. And it was like, listen, devastating for me because it took me years to get myself back into television after that. But one thing that I feel like is really different now than was what I experienced, at least then, was that in 07, I didn't know any writers who had second jobs that were like consistent. I know a lot of writers right now who are like working in the service industry or working like, you know, in sort of like not like part-time consistent positions because they've been, you know, they've had issues because mini rooms, you know, they're not senior enough for mini rooms and they're like having a hard time finding more than 8 weeks of work at a time because of the, you know, the way that the streamers work. And so I feel like there is actually like a really important sort of precedent to set here beyond just like, what do we do with creative industries and how do we protect creative workers? But also like, how do we protect rideshare workers also, because they have a lot more in common in terms of how they get work with Hollywood workers than they do with auto workers, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is sort of like an important, and it's really the first union to represent that kind of workforce that has been part of this like wave of labor actions that we've been seeing of late. So I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit about that actually, because I think you brought up the mini rooms, but people don't, I think, maybe necessarily know how shows get written, but that's one of the things that y'all are striking about, right?
Yes.
I mean, just in terms of like, you know, you used to get on a network show, there'd be 23 episodes and you work on it all year and that was your job.
Yes.
That's not real for anyone anymore.
Yeah, that was 9 to 10 months of a year that you worked nonstop.
Right.
And now, like I said, it's like 8 episodes, 10 episodes, 12 episodes is a very typical order. The show I work on is 10 episodes a season. But I was one of the, our show is one of the kind of exceptions in that we, all of our writers go to set. All of our writers, not all of them, most of them go to set. Most of us work in post-production on our episodes. And quite frankly, the only reason we do that is because our showrunner is pretty powerful and can demand that. I think I've even had executives from our studio say, we don't do this for anybody else. And I think they mean to say it as like,
you should be
happy.
Right, we'll be lucky. Right. And I'm like, no, that's how this is supposed to work.
Right.
The whole system is set up from writer's assistant all the way up to a showrunner is like an apprenticeship. And you're supposed to learn how to do it each step of the way. And we're now cutting that off for like the vast majority of mid to lower level writers who will not go on set, not work in post until like they've been promoted to like a co-executive producer. And suddenly they get to that spot and they don't have the skill set needed to like run a show. And that's a problem that the streamers are gonna have in like 10 years. The problem we have now is, like you said, with these short orders, they're still paying people the rates they were paying for a 22 episode order for only 8 episodes. And so that's 10, 12 weeks of the year. And if you don't have another TV job.
And generally you get paid by the week as a writer, right?
Yes, yeah.
So it's not like you get paid a salary. You get paid by the week. And so an 8 episode order means a lot fewer weeks of pay.
Most writers right now are 10 to 12 weeks. And then if you're lucky enough to go through production, you'll get some more on top of that. But the important thing to point out here is that like, it's not like those things just happened out of thin air. Like the streaming model made those changes themselves. They conditioned audiences to binge 10 episodes at a time.
Yeah.
Like, right. we, you know, you used to space episodes out, and now that, I think that binge model has created a need for more content, but they, it also creates a need for shorter seasons. And so, like, suddenly every show is only 8, 6, 8, 10 episodes.
Yeah.
And that's how they afford it. And that's, you know, great, lots of jobs. But, like, if those jobs aren't allowing people to live normal lives, then, like...
Well, if you're only getting one of those jobs a year, because a lot of...
You're not guaranteed anything.
Right. No, and lower-level writers don't have the contacts and the reputation and all the things you need to be getting multiple of those a year.
Right.
So, like, it takes a while to get to the point where you can stop, you know, working at Starbucks also.
Correct.
Because you have enough jobs to fill out your year. Under that model, it's much, it's gig working. It's essentially like a gig work model, like you're saying. And that isn't, I don't think, a sustainable way for a highly unionized industry to continue to operate.
No.
Just because a bunch of like tech bros got involved. Yeah. It's like, get out of here.
But I mean, if all of these, if all of these unions are, I mean, they're going to have to come back, right? I mean, they're not going to like it, but I mean, they're essentially going to come to the point where they're not going to be able to make anything.
Correct.
That's
the point.
And it sounds like it's maybe not even that far off, potentially.
I don't think it is. I think enough people are already hurting from this that this is just the first strike.
Also,
happening.
We're talking about a workforce that has been out of work repeatedly throughout the year. I feel like if anyone could hang on to get the deal, it would be the WGA, because no one's been able to get work.
No.
So everyone already has their second job. Nobody's, it's not like a situation like with auto workers where it's like, how long can we go without pay? Like, there are certain writers, I'm sure, who are going to be experiencing tough times in the months ahead.
Yes,
so not to discount that, but I'm just saying, like, when you're used to a work model where you have huge gaps in work all the time, and especially if those gaps have gotten bigger in the last few years, like, does anyone love that? No, but also that's a workforce that could stay on strike for much longer than you as a studio might be comfortable having them be, you know?
We've been conditioned to like to have fallow periods where we have to save money for, and so here we are.
You want those to be as short as possible, obviously.
Of course,
sure.
But I mean, like on the studio side, they operate on a model where they need to keep making revenue all year because they actually work all year.
Yes.
Like, so I mean, it seems like they are not in the kind of position where they can just be like, it's cool if we don't have anything new going on for the next, you know, 100 days, because they're not.
But I mean,
used
but it's
that.
Not cool because they've also conditioned like shareholders for like to expect constant,
constant growth
all the time, which is like unsustainable for
in
everybody.
Any business model. In any business, P.S.
You cannot constantly grow. I'm sorry, you can't. It's impossible.
Also, it's stupid.
I know. Capitalism, guys.
Capitalism.
It's bullshit.
A dumb plan. But in any case, do you have anything that you want to tell us about what the WGA is asking of membership in terms of their contributions to the strike, in terms of picketing and things like that? And also, do you want to tell people who are not in the WGA what they can do?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're in Los Angeles or in New York, there are a lot of protests there too. We are happy to have people join the picket line in solidarity. We've had people from SAG, we've had people from IATSE come. And I've also just had friends who were like, had a vested interest.
If you're bored. If you're bored and your friends are walking
just
around.
Just want to come and like and be supportive, we'll take that too.
One thing I would note is if you love to just hang out and chat, picketing is actually really fun.
Oh, amazing. It's also great networking
from
for
a,
people who want to
lifetime
like,
union kid.
Yeah.
I love a picket line.
Yeah. You can also support if you want to bring coffee, donuts, pizza, water, sunscreen, any supplies like that to any of the picket lines, you're more than welcome to. And that's basically at any studio in town. And what else? Oh, and if you're not in this part of town, there's something called the Entertainment Fund where you can donate, and that helps the most vulnerable people in our union be able to like afford their rent.
Augment their income.
Yes,
basically, right,
I think it used to be called the Actors Fund, but they're rebranding it the Entertainment Fund because it's not just for actors anymore. Or, like, at a minimum, amplify the messaging on social media. I think this is, at its core, a publicity battle. You know, like, because, you know, it started with obsession on a stock price, it will continue to focus on with obsession on a stock price. And the more bad press they get, the more that's probably going to go down. And that's when they're going to start paying attention and come back to the table.
Yeah.
So any and all of those things are more than welcome.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Should we move on to talking about what the other mega wealthy are up to
Besides
studio bosses?
Sure.
This is an exciting week for just mega wealthy people acting a fool and acting corrupt in various times and places.
Doing what they do.
Doing what they do. Yeah. I got a phone call this week from my mother, who was just more delighted than I've ever heard her be, because she had been watching the news with my dad, and they got like 14 breaking news updates about Clarence Thomas corruption accusations and like other Supreme Court dramas. So what we learned this week was there were two things. From ProPublica, we learned that Harlan Crowe, already accused of giving Clarence Thomas vacations and yacht trips and oil paintings of them all hanging out and whatever they were all up to, like a bunch of aristocrats. And I think notably, the one that I always thought was craziest was that he bought the property that Clarence Thomas's mother lives in right now.
Sure.
So that's weird. None of this declared, by the way. None
extremely
of this declared.
Normal behavior.
Regular friend behavior. Yeah. His latest regular friend behavior move that we learned about was that he paid for... Clarence Thomas has this great nephew who he has been raising as a son.
Yeah.
And Harlan Crowe paid for this son to go to a private boarding school in Georgia. Paid for his son's education. Also not declared.
In Georgia?
I know. Get a grip.
Do better if you have like an ultra wealthy billionaire.
Yeah, if Harlan Crowe is paying for right.
Go to Switzerland.
Go to Switzerland.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
Amateurs.
But also not declared. A direct, like, I can't think of a more direct gift that has truly nothing to do with anything other than currying favor with an important person.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Somewhere like Harlan Crowe was asked, I think recently, like whether he thought he would be friends with Clarence Thomas if Clarence Thomas wasn't a Supreme Court justice. And he was like, well, I don't know. So,
you know what? He was honest.
But
for once.
So Clarence Thomas has said that he was advised that he didn't have to declare any of these gifts, but would now follow ethics guidelines. I want to know by who. Was
who
he advised
him?
By himself? Was he having a personal advisement session where he learned that he didn't have to declare any of the incredibly sketchy gifts? Because during this time, Harlan Crowe has had business before the Supreme Court.
Of course he has.
So this is not like just a friend who just like is hanging out with you and happens to be a fellow important person. This is an example of somebody doing payoffs to the Supreme
Court. Corruption. Yeah,
it's like corruption.
Very, very open corruption. Yeah.
But it was a big news day because right after that ProPublica story broke, the Washington Post broke a story about Leonard Leo, who is like a right-wing legal activist, making payments to Ginni Thomas for tens of thousands of dollars for consulting work between 2011 and 2012 and not... And very specifically,
removed
not including her name from the billing
paperwork.
Noted insurrectionist Ginni Thomas.
Right.
Yeah. Like $80,000, I think,
yes.
In total, wasn't it?
Yes.
A lot of money.
It was a huge amount of money that they were just like, well, we didn't want to declare it because we didn't want to raise any eyebrows. It's like, well.
The eyebrows are up, guys.
Right.
If you don't want to declare something because you don't want to raise eyebrows, then.
Then you're
you
committing
shouldn't
an
be
act
doing
of corruption.
It, or you should be declaring it.
Like, right.
One of the two things.
What you're doing is corruption at that point.
Yeah.
So that all broke as breaking news stories during one evening's news viewing, which delighted my mother to no end. She couldn't have been more excited. But also, these are not the only justices that are like under scrutiny at the moment, because there's an issue with Neil Gorsuch. And then, you know, that was the one that John Roberts wouldn't testify in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee over. So when, you remember we talked about last week or the week before, John Roberts was refusing to go testify about all of these corruption issues.
Yeah.
The one that he was actually asked to comment on was none of the Clarence Thomas ones, of which there are many. Hmm. It was the Gorsuch one.
Oh, interesting.
Gorsuch
must be so pissed, by the way, because like nobody was talking about that. You guys were talking about it, but like not that many people were raising a stink, and then this Clarence Thomas stuff came out, and people were like, wait, this fucking Gorsuch thing just
Gorsuch
happened
Gorsuch is
too.
Also a fucking asshole.
Yeah, like,
but also, this is perhaps because Roberts has issues with his own wife and some legal, or some corruption questions having to do with legal recruiters and firms they were doing business with that were in front of the Supreme Court.
Oh,
it, the whole thing, here's what I have to say about this. It is, in my opinion, fine with me if they take the liberal justices down with them to get rid of these guys. Like, I don't care about any liberal justice enough.
Just start over.
Start over. I don't, if you find that Elena, first of all, I know the ladies weren't up to this kind of thing because you don't even hear about Amy Coney Barrett being up to this kind of thing.
Mm.
This is what men do when they're in power.
Yeah,
so, like, I feel like on one hand, we can trust that even the evil ladies probably weren't up to this level of corruption. But even if they were, if you can find that Elena Kagan was doing secret deals that were even lamer than these with people that had business in front of the Supreme Court, and you want to, you know, get rid of her, you want to impeach her because you're going to impeach the rest of them, I don't care. Do it.
Do it.
Get rid of all of them.
I don't care. Nobody's been making Elena Kagan merch and
I think the risk here that the Senate is calculating is that they don't want to open the door to Republicans doing the same thing to us, investigating our Supreme Court justices.
Oh yeah.
We should tell them to go for it.
We should tell them to
go for it. Yeah. Investigate your little hearts out. Get rid of all of them. I don't care. Yeah. Do anything.
Well, Dick Durbin says everything is on the table, though.
Yeah, he would say that. That's the kind of thing that you say when you're not planning to do anything. And so you're like, I'll just kill them with options. And then none of the options will be right, and we won't do anything.
I wonder how AOC's plan of, like, if she needs to draft, papers to...
Oh, yes.
To impeachment papers for Clarence Thomas, she would. Remember when she said that, like, months ago, and then she hasn't done it? I'm curious if maybe...
Time now.
It might be time. It seemed like it was time then, but nobody's done it. So
yeah.
I feel like somebody should revisit that with her, maybe on Twitter.
And I also said this when we last recorded, so forgive me. But I feel like, where is the political pressure on these people to get them out? Mm. Like, it's not really the official channels don't work because there's no oversight over these people. No. So don't worry about it. Threaten them. Good God. How is anything else getting done in Washington? It's just people walking around making subtle threats towards each other. That's how Nancy Pelosi gets people to vote on bills. That's how everyone's operating.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if you can't get rid of them through boring legal processes that take 100 million years and also for some reason don't involve these people anyway because there's no legal process to provide oversight to the Supreme Court justices for reasons I can't possibly begin to identify, threaten them. Just get rid of them. I don't, no one has time for this.
No. Well, and the idea that they're just untouchable gods who literally have a lifetime appointment, can't get fired till they die. Seems like that needs to go away too.
Yes. Now would be the time. But actually there is the House.
It's on the table, Grant.
The House is starting to look at this. Actually, I saw an article.
It's going to stay on the fucking table, by the way.
Ben Sofnis sent me an article because this was his legal theory.
Our legal expert.
Our Brain Just Live legal expert, Ben Sofnis, sent me an article about how the House is starting to look towards some of these other sort of funding mechanisms that they can use to discipline the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And so he was like, I don't know if anything's going to happen, but this is suddenly a discussion that was never a discussion before.
Right, because we were talking with him about them turning the lights off there.
Yeah.
Right?
Wait, there's all sorts of ways in which the Congress has to approve security funding.
Killing the Wi-Fi?
There's a million ways in which Congress has oversight over just the facilities the Supreme Court operates in.
Yeah.
So, exercise some of that oversight.
Good, do it. I don't think the Wi-Fi is going to work. They're all too old.
Yeah, the Wi-Fi thing. It's anyway. You think Neil Gorsuch is checking his email with Clarence Thomas? Can you imagine him at a computer? Just having a...
Yeah.
But I think that you mentioned threaten them, shame them or whatever, but they don't, the conservatives anymore, threats don't really work because they don't care if they're dragged through the mud because their supporters kind of don't give a shit. Part of the public campaign against it relies on them having remorse or guilt or shame.
Yes.
And that's so fucking long gone from that party now.
Yeah. I know.
What, it doesn't take anything, nothing matters.
Yeah. I know, and I'm with you. Whatever it is, it has to make it seem like it's untenable for them to remain there.
I have a strategy already, so everybody can rest.
Okay.
John Roberts cares about nothing but his legacy Chief Justice. He's the weak link here.
Yeah.
Does Clarence Thomas have shame? No, of course not.
No.
He hasn't had shame in decades. Don't worry about him.
He entered the court
without
no shame.
He's been shameless since the beginning.
Yeah.
But John Roberts does not want to be the man who destroyed the Supreme Court.
No.
He's the weak link here. Start with him.
Yeah.
Don't, and then go after the rest of them after you've gotten rid of him.
Well, it's like we talked about with Ben. I think especially if these people who have been giving these guys money and, paying for kids' schoolings and things like that, have had business in front of the Supreme Court, then you can sort of start looking at being well, we don't have to listen to that ruling, right?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
So once you're getting to the point where especially if you're John Roberts, who is supposedly some person who cares about the court, I don't know that I buy that, but that's the public persona that he has, right?
Yeah. Right.
If you can sort of undermine the court's, you know, authority in a way.
He's the Chief Justice where we stopped listening to the Supreme Court entirely under him because of his poor leadership. No, that's his place in history. The only thing you have over him is his place in history. But we are people, so we can invent his place in history. That's true. It's a storytelling exercise.
Let's just start calling him Harriet Myers until
further notice. Exactly.
Because that's who should be there.
Yeah.
And women don't do this kind of shit, which we've established.
Exactly. Yeah. Speaking of the courts.
Yeah.
I was reading an article earlier this week about the debt ceiling, as we all have been having to hear nonstop about because of how boring and stupid it is.
Speaking of dumb threats.
That's right. And I was reading about how some scholars, which I would argue are the scholars that are on the correct side of history, because a lot of them are sort of modern monetary theory adjacent, but think that Congress actually invalidated the debt limit back in the 70s.
Oh, yeah, let's
because
go
apparently,
with that.
So I was reading a little bit about what exactly the situation is with the debt ceiling, because it seems like a thing that we just like made up to have fake negotiations all year so that Congress can just like do nothing. And it turns out, so it was basically in 1917, there was something called the Liberty Bond Act, in which the debt ceiling, the whole idea for the debt ceiling is rooted. In 1917, it was the president who made up the federal budget, and then Congress was just like there to provide some oversight. And so during that period, like, you know, there, we were getting involved in a world war, like there was a lot going on, and so they passed this thing so that, you know, like the spending increases can be sort of like kept in Congress can have some oversight over the spending increases that are happening at the time. But that's changed a lot because in part, the president doesn't really set the budget anymore. Congress actually sets the budget.
Right.
And that's been for the last 50 years. That's a change that happened in the 70s. And so when we sort of like changed, when we changed the way that we do the budget process so that Congress was like the sort of like main force behind the budget, a lot of legal scholars are wondering if maybe we made the debt ceiling irrelevant anyway because it was rooted in an obsolete law. And a time where the oversight, where the idea was to give Congress oversight over the president's budget, but right now it's just giving Congress oversight over their own budget. The budget is the oversight over the budget. Like, they're making the budget, so they have oversight over the budget. They don't need extra special.
They spent the money, so they shouldn't have to pass a law
to say they can spend it. It's redundant.
Right. Oh, interesting.
Well, then let's get this in front of a judge. Harriet Myers, are you listening?
Exactly. But actually, I was reading a few people's takes on it, and a lot of them thought that if they, like, they're not really sure how this would play out in court, obviously. Mm-hmm. But some, you know, a lot of people were asking, like, with this kind of, you know, conservative Supreme Court, what do you think would happen? And a lot of them were like, honestly, I think even they would see that it's not, like, it's not something that's so sort of, like, partisanly rooted in law that it would be, like, hard to show a conservative justice that this is like not the law. That said, they're so political, who knows what they would do.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if maybe the move here is just to like literally ignore the debt ceiling and then let the GOP try to take it in court, take us in court in the other direction.
To crash the economy.
Yes.
Yeah. I say do it.
That's interesting. I like that.
Right?
Joe Biden will never sign on to this because it sounds...
Well, he hates upsetting the system.
Captain of civility. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So...
Yeah. But
it's a nice idea.
It's a nice idea. Well, and
Republicans like having it.
I think Democrats like having it.
Well, there's part of me that wished, you know, a lot of people, I think it's stupid for the Republicans to do this because I think they will yet again be held at fault for, you know, crashing the economy if they end up going through with this. So like that's their own stupidity. But on some level, you know, part of what annoys me about the Democrats, the main thing that annoys me about the Democrats, which we've been talking about for years, is that they sort of don't, they choose to not wield any of the power that they have because they always just want to be the adults in the room.
Yeah.
There was an interview where I saw, I think it was Ro Khanna earlier this week, said something to the effect of like, because somebody, I think, asked him about like the Democrats not doing it or the stupidity of the Republicans or something. And he was like, well, we're the adults there. I'm paraphrasing it. But he said, would you have suggested that the Democrats threaten to crash the economy and just like asked for universal health care?
Yes.
Yes.
That's exactly what I would have recommended.
Do that next time. You can.
That's
like at your earliest convenience.
That's my recommendation. I think we've made that recommendation.
Because that would fly better, I think, with the public. Because the reason that the Republicans are going to be held accountable for this is because it's so ridiculous that they're doing it over their desire to make sure people remain poor and not be able to feed
themselves.
Well,
that's the thing. Yeah, they don't actually have any like motivating principle behind just like being in charge and having power, and like they don't have an issue to get behind.
Right, and like making sure that people don't have access to Medicaid and whatever else.
Well, the real issues that they're behind are just like, how do we lower rich people's taxes? Like, they're not issues that are universal. Yeah.
So I feel like if we actually did something like that, it was just sort of like, I don't feel like we would be held to account in the same way that they would, because we would be advocating for a position that would be supported by 90% of the country.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like I agree with you that it's stupid, but while it's there, it is, I don't begrudge them trying to do this.
No.
You know what I mean? Because it's one lever of power that they have. So like, why not try?
But I think that the real issue with it is, I think that both Republicans and Democrats like having this here. Yeah. And I think it's because the Democrats don't like wielding power and it protects them from wielding power. So it's like, you would have to
And it allows them to, they know it's a winner for them.
Like, exactly. This is,
they're never not going to be there.
They're on the winning end of it every time. The Republicans jump into their own like well about it. Just like every.
That's why Biden is not negotiating with them. Biden would love nothing more to go negotiate with Kevin McCarthy and cut Medicaid.
Of course. I mean, cutting Social Security? That's his dream.
That's his jam. I mean, but he knows that this is a win and it's election season. So like, he's going to let them, you know, flounder.
When
here.
Is it not election season? Well,
I know. That's such an important question.
Raise your hand if you're tired.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was sort of like, as the coronation was going on, I was like, would a monarchy be nice? That's stability.
Oh, no.
That's when you know things are getting bleak. Yeah. I think that, you know, Democrats are using it for the purpose that they like to use it for, which is to not wield power. And the problem with the Democrats is their lack of interest in wielding power. It's not that they don't know how to wield power. I'm sure that they could figure out how to wield power if they were trying to wield power. That's the first step to wielding power, is trying. And they're not even at that first step.
Well, they're also, I know nobody wants to defend Democrats here, but like, they're also like driving a car with a person next to them holding like a grenade that they pulled the pin on, and they're like, I'll fucking drop this.
Right.
Like, you know, like, Republicans don't give a shit about any of it.
Yeah.
And so like, I understand the adult in the room mentality, but like, when you have somebody that volatile on the other
100%. You would rather not crash the economy.
Like, I think the counterpoint is that they did this even when the Republicans were positioning themselves as the sober in charge people. Like, this has been consistent no matter how crazy Republicans have been.
Yeah.
So it's not really a question of like, and I think on some level, the Republicans did this in answer to an interest in populist policy that is universal. So, like, there was a change in how the American electorate approached politics that you saw play out at the beginning of, you know, with the first Bernie Sanders campaign, but then also kind of come to a head in the Trump years, because those are both populist figures who are speaking to people about politics in a different way than any of the other parties were speaking to, you know, any party was speaking to them before. And so when you have a world in which the sort of voting populace is looking for populist messaging and populist policy, it certainly gave the right permission to go balls to the wall crazy, but they were doing it in response to an actual demand. It wasn't, you know, from people. It wasn't like everyone was just sitting here being like, we should be sober and responsible. And then they were like, let's not.
But it's
like having a toddler in the car with you.
Right.
It's negotiating with toddlers.
A toddler holding a loaded gun.
Right. Toddler holding a loaded
gun. Not an uncommon thing in America.
I think more so than that, it's like having an adult who's a sociopath in the car with you and having to figure out, how do I outsmart this sociopath?
Yeah.
And sometimes outsmarting a sociopath, like, we're not actually sitting next to a toddler. We're sitting next to an adult sociopath. And outsmarting an adult sociopath isn't the same as outsmarting a toddler. You don't actually have to be their parent. You have to just make sure that you get to the other side of the bridge together, you know?
I think what they should have done here, besides all of the, because I think what they did is they allowed themselves to be found out.
Yeah.
Because they've, you know, to your point about like, you know, going around and acting like populists, you know, if they would have tied this debt ceiling bill to a budget where there were some actual like good things for some people in there, like, you know, we're going to give you a tax credit for X, Y, or Z. Like, Republicans themselves over the years have like favored a child tax credit. I mean, they've gone away from that.
But, it's a Republican policy. You guys.
Or, you know, or some of these like fake things that like Josh Hawley has advocated for or whatever else.
Direct payments to people. Republican idea.
But they're not, as a party, actually interested in those things. And I think that's what this has proven out. So like, if anybody still thinks that they are the party of any of that, like, we now know that that was we now know on paper that that's not real. That's not who they actually are.
Yeah. No.
They don't care about you.
No. And not to bring this back to the writer's strike
No, let's bring it back to the writers.
Do it. Go ahead. That's why you're here.
But I think this whole like this ceding the ground of populism to Republicans has come about in large part, and I learned this week, due to the stripping of union rights over the last however many years.
Absolutely.
Because that used to be such a stronghold for Democrats, and when that went away, suddenly Democrats had less to offer working class people, and those people got angrier and angrier and poorer, and suddenly they had.
Looking for strong men.
And in this case, it was a spray tanned guy with a fucking blonde wig, and that was enough.
Dare you call his head a wig?
That's true. It is. I suppose it's technically attached to his head.
It's a toupee.
Is it a weave? But I just like all of this shit is of a piece, and it's upsetting.
Yeah.
For sure.
But also that gives us a roadmap to how to get it back. I mean, I think it's very promising that there's been so much labor action recently, in part because it gives you something to invest in on the left, as opposed that is populist.
Well, and labor action against giant corporations are doing this, like Amazon, like Starbucks, like these
right.
tech
well,
companies
that's the other,
movie studios.
Right? I mean, like, raise the taxes on some of those corporations.
Have
in
them
this
pay
bill,
taxes
you know
in
what
general.
I mean? But like we
just
know
one
that,
tax.
But we know that they cut their taxes. So you know what I mean?
Right.
Like again, it's just it's all disingenuous, everything that they're trying to sell to you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And with that in mind, let's talk about the jobs report.
Oh my
Speaking God. Of disingenuous things. Is there anything faker out there than a jobs report?
No, because we added $253,000 or 53,000 jobs, not dollars. Right. This month. But the thing that is so crazy, and we talk about this all the time, and I think the reason that I figured out why they're so annoying is because what happens is they announce these job numbers, and then the stock market immediately reacts
right.
in some sort of like wild way. Mm-hmm. Either like goes crazy, you know, up or down, or it'll cause the Fed to think that they need to keep raising interest rates or whatever. But then inevitably, a month or 2 months later, you find out that they were completely wrong, which I don't care that they're wrong. I don't give a shit about the jobs numbers.
Right.
But it's just bizarre.
They've been fake
that
since the beginning.
It's bizarre that we have chosen as a people to like let our entire economy react to them when they are so wrong. Because the thing that jumped out to me about these jobs numbers was when they announced them wasn't that we added that many because that was higher than people expected. It was that per the last 2 months, last month they revised them down by 71,000 and February they revised down by 78,000. For the last 2 months we removed 150,000 almost of the jobs that we had supposedly added to the economy, and I'm sure that the at the moment that you know when February was announced at 300 some thousand, I remember everybody spiraling out of control and everybody went nuts, and it was part of why we had to raise rates and the stock market did whatever it did. It's like, why are we doing that?
Well,
it doesn't make any sense.
I have a question about, this is my question about a lot of the economy, as you know, so this is just more evidence in the arsenal of the economy is fake, you know, that we've been acquiring over the years anyway.
No, I know, I mean, we've been saying it for a long time, but like, it's just, it's frustrating.
And that's not even, like, you guys say it a lot, and I laugh every time you say one of those into the podcast, because one, it's funny, and two, it's true. But like, and saying that it's fake is not just like a, shaking your fist
it's
at the sky.
It's like made up human behavior that we're just like pulling random strings that have nothing to do with reality.
Making
on
it
the
seem
basis
like
of,
science.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's got numbers.
It's an arbitrary thing we've decided we have to react to once a month.
Right.
And maybe we don't.
Maybe everything that the stock market reacts to in general is fake.
It is.
Because it is. It's just news.
They're all just operating on vibes. Like,
yes, it's all vibes.
It's a PR battle.
I mean, that's why we're talking about, like, why is it important to have visibility for a strike as opposed to just picketing?
Yeah.
The reason you picket is for visibility, and that's for PR, and that's to tank the stock
market.
That's
to tank the stock price, because that's the thing that matters.
Exactly.
Which is so stupid.
And, like, that's based on what? A bunch of guys with signs on a street? Like, you can't just, like, know in your hearts that... It's like, I mean, it's madness. Also, very impressed with your mental math, Brent. I love when Brent does mental math on the podcast. I like when he adds numbers.
But it was close enough.
I was impressed anyway. I like when you add numbers in your head because I can't really do that. And it always impresses me.
We have to stop talking about how fake the economy is, because we will just realize we're living in a simulacrum. And
that's right.
Like, then everybody just implodes. So let's keep going.
Great. Let's talk about the border. We're sending a bunch of troops there. So that's
how fun. And why are we sending a bunch of troops there?
Because Title 42 is ending,
right?
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's part of the slow rolling efforts to decide the pandemic is over.
Yeah.
Right.
Basically, we decided that in ending the pandemic, we also had to end the policy where we just keep sending people back for vague safety reasons, quote unquote, yeah. or vague public health reasons. And so instead, we're expecting like a crushing sort of like number of people to come across the border all at once, because this whole time we've been using the pandemic as a pretense to kick people out of the country. Yeah.
Right. But don't worry, guys. Those 1,500 active duty troops are just there to do like clerical work.
Yeah, they're there sure. for paper. They're administrative. Don't worry about it. They're not going to do anything. Right.
Famous de-escalators.
Always. Troops. Yeah.
Famous de-escalators heavily armed.
Right. Famous armed de-escalators who right. just love to do a little paperwork.
They're just there for
keep track of stuff.
Do not worry about anything.
Yeah. They're going to be looking at spreadsheets and stuff.
I'm honestly shocked that they didn't just continue the pretext of COVID to.
Well, haven't they tried?
I think they've tried.
I think within the courts, and I think the Supreme Court even weighed in on Title 42, yeah. I think, didn't they? I mean, like, yeah. I think Joe Biden would like this to continue until the end of days.
Oh, he's trying to stop anyone from crossing the border. Yeah.
I mean, more just for him to not have to worry about
it. To not have to deal with it.
I mean.
But I mean, he's, you know, continuing a long and proud Democratic tradition of having equally cruel border policy as Republicans, but pretending like he's some sort of great humanitarian.
Yeah. When I know nobody will touch immigration in terms of like policy making because it's just
after the gangs of 8, 6, and 14 all sure. tried.
Wasn't this one of the things that Kamala Harris was supposed to? Wasn't
that's
that?
Right.
Wasn't this in her?
Well, they only gave her a portfolio of unsolvable problems.
I don't know.
And that's why
it's
you
why
can
her
find
brain
her
broke.
Right. No, she's just running around singing the wheels on the bus. Like, right. What would you do?
Right. Yeah, after you've been handed the Middle East or something. It's like nothing but long-standing unsolvable problems in her portfolio. So that's great news.
Yeah.
Also, the Bidens managed to piss off the environmentalist scene
Maybe
this week
they
as well.
Maybe they figured that they had sufficiently pissed them off, so it doesn't matter any longer.
Yeah, they were just like, Willow happened. No. We're past it. We're going to keep digging.
We approved the Willow project, so like, what's another major Alaska drilling project?
They can't feel anything anymore. keep going.
Yeah, and this is like also the second major project that died under the Trump administration and has been resurrected under the Biden administration, which I think is a fascinating caveat to all of this. And largely it had to do with trade policy under Trump.
Oh,
but
sure.
But the idea that the Biden administration is just wandering around resurrecting long dead, you know, like this Alaska LNG project, they had like in 2019, they like laid off half their workforce and were like looking like they were closing up shop. And then it's like Joe Biden comes to town and suddenly we're back in business. A $40 billion project.
Get the jobs report out.
That's right. You gotta get the jobs report out. And yeah. We'll only learn later they weren't real jobs. But we'll know in time. Yeah, it's great news, everybody.
I am not driving a fucking Tesla around with all the connotations that entails for you to start drilling in Alaska again. We're done with that. Come on.
I know. I thought we were moving on from this
also
era.
Please build more superchargers. There are not enough in Los Angeles, and the other ones take forever.
Mayor Pete's on that.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah. That's what he's doing instead of stopping train accidents.
That's to tell you that it's never going to happen.
Right.
But just to clarify, you're not getting those charging stations.
It's never happening.
It's not happening.
Great.
I feel like another
train will crash and I will not get...
This is also going to be like one of those, like, you know how we're always planning to like lower carbon emissions by XYZ percent and then later we'll be like, let's not though.
Yeah.
I feel like this is one of those things where they're like, we're going to switch to all electric. Everyone's suddenly like, by 2032, we're going to be all electric. Everyone's going to be all electric. And then in like 2031, everyone's going to be like, let's not do it though.
Oh God. Well, are we going to have to see more like Instagram stories of you'll take my gas stove for my cold dead hands? Like, because I can't go through
that,
something that stupid.
I know. That Ron DeSantimonious press conference with the gas stoves in the background.
So good.
That was one of his crowning moments as
Didn't
a
New York
Trumpian
State
figure.
Didn't New York State just recently...
Try to ban it.
They banned new construction with gas stoves. New construction, you can't put gas stoves
anywhere. I'm curious when, because that feels like a long time coming. Like, nobody actually needs to build new construction with gas stoves. I'm curious when these, like, the retroactive gas stove usage in New York, which is a heavily gas stove reliant community, is, I think, where the actual problem is.
Yeah.
Unless, I mean, maybe they're just planning to tear down every single building in New York and build a disgusting high rise, which
I mean, it
seems
like
to be
that's the plan.
Yeah.
Seems to be something that they're moving towards.
Yeah.
So maybe there won't be any more gas stoves because they'll have torn down every building that had a gas line.
Oh, shit.
And we'll just move on from there. Let's talk a little bit about the stellar week of appointments we have from the Biden administration as well.
Jesus.
First of all, podcast favorite, Sean Patrick Maloney.
Yeah.
It's back on the scene.
I just love the reporting on this, which I don't know if it was from a press release or not, or if it was just the actual Axios reporting, but like...
That they're looking for a soft place for him to land?
Yeah, because Biden nominated Sean Patrick Maloney to be the ambassador to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which is in Paris. And like... Fine. I guess I don't even know whether I should care or not, right? I mean, like...
You don't.
You know, but, like, the reporting on this was just sort of, like, they wanted to, like, you know, give this to him because he'd done such a great job with the Democrats, like, not getting blown out in the midterms, even though he, A, lost his own election, and then they also, like, made it seem like the reason that he had lost his own election was because, like, Republicans dared put television commercials on the air.
Right, as if
like,
they had never thought of television commercials.
I don't know if that quote is in here or not, but they were like, you know, he had a really rough race because Republicans
ran
against him.
Right. Yeah. Well, also, he's from New York, correct?
Yes.
So, like, the New York Democratic Party was the entire reason we don't have the House right now.
Yeah, he was a major part of the problem. Yeah. John Patrick Mullen.
A singular part of the problem. Him and Jay Jacobs, two men who caused the problem, personally.
So, I will say this OECD... just on its face sounds fake, and maybe that's
the plan here.
It's just being like shipped off somewhere to run
but
a fake
my board. Favorite part of this story is that the guy who had that position is going to become the ambassador to Italy, and it turns out for 2 years the Biden administration has just been sitting on the Italy ambassadorship, which is like a huge plum position that everyone wants, and just like not making an appointment for reasons no one has identified. Axios called it a diplomatic mystery. Is it?
Well done. Is it a plum position just because you get to go live in Italy?
Yes, you just live in Rome and hang out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not because we actually have that much.
We have no business to do there.
Right, okay.
So because of that, it's like getting France or something. It's like you get to go, you live in a fancy European city, you get celebrated, you get to live in a fancy residence, you have a swimming pool, and then you just like go to events, go to get like galas of various sorts.
Yeah. Here's this line, by the way, because I just opened the link. It said, Biden has been looking for a soft landing for the former lawmaker who lost his seat in upstate New York after being pummeled by Republican ads, but helped minimize House Democrats' losses in the midterms.
Certainly
like, they could have just inserted the word, like, loser into there. I mean, really, like, that's...
Yeah.
Well, speaking of loser, the person who won, who, like, mitigated the elections was Donald Trump. Like, he was the reason, the anvil that sunk Republican, the red wave.
Yeah, it wasn't brilliant strategy from Sean Patrick Maloney.
No. It was also it was the Dobbs ruling.
It was, right.
It was like
Republicans
Maloney.
Did everything they could to stop you from voting for them.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Yeah, this was all...
And we still lost the House in that context.
Right. And we lost the House by the margin that we did in spite of Sean Patrick Maloney.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, though, the one thing that is interesting to me about this report as we look forward to the next elections are that does mean that Mondaire Jones could run for that seat again.
That's
It'd be
true.
Nice to have him back in the House
well,
instead
that's the
of Sean
other thing
Patrick
too. The reason that he even ended up in that district is because he changed into it. And I realized that like there had been, you know, they'd redone the maps there. But I mean, like he really inserted himself.
Yeah, it was Mondaire Jones' district.
Into Mondaire Jones'
district.
So he lost
someone else's district in addition. And then Mondaire had to go to CD10, which was like packed Dan Golden's district.
Yeah, I see him on CNN every once in a while. And that makes
well, he
happy.
Needs something to do.
Yeah.
He needs a soft landing place also.
He does.
Everyone
he really
does.
Yeah.
Let's give him a soft landing in the House, though.
We were elated to see Susan, foreign policy expert Susan Rice leave her job not doing
domestic
foreign policy,
policy advisor.
Doing domestic policy. But then we just saw today who replaced her, and it's Neera Tanden.
Neera fucking
had
Tanden.
Been nominated to head OMB, but had to like remove her own nomination because it turned out...
Democrats fucking hate her.
Everybody hated her. Like, Bernie Sanders hated her. Joe Manchin hated her. Republicans hated her. And, like, look, there's something to be said, I think, sometimes for, like, having everybody hate you, right? Because this is like, well, maybe I'm doing something right. Everybody hates
but
me.
But in her case,
like,
she's
not
doing anything right.
That is Elon Musk thinking, and we're not doing that.
That's, maybe that's the voice I was doing. But, you know, she's awful.
She's awful.
And, like, not
and
just...
everyone knows it.
And not just because she's mean on Twitter, but she also, like... Didn't she, like, out a sexual harassment victim, like, when she was at Think Progress or something? Like, I mean, she's an awful human
being.
She's
a person who is both professionally and personally hated by, like, anyone who's ever crossed paths with her.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, a lot of people, and I don't mind this contingent of Washington people. There are a lot of evil politicians who are like fun dinner party circuit people. I talk about this all the time because I'm always talking about people losing their dinner party circuit invitations and how that's like, you know, like I think
that's more threatening.
That's more threatening. Exactly. So I feel like a lot of Trump administration officials, I would be like, if it was somebody who came from like the actual swamp, you know, those people oftentimes were risking their dinner party circuit in order to go take that job. And I thought that was dumb of them because that's your ticket to continued employment.
Right. Because now what do you do?
Now what do you do? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's like Barr. Where's Bill Barr going
to
go?
Yeah. The only person who wants to have dinner with Neera Tanden is Hillary Clinton.
That's right. There's two people on the planet Earth who are willing to have have her at a dinner party. It's Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's... I wonder what kind of domestic policy she'll advocate for.
Well, I mean, nothing good if history is... I mean, like, she's...
She's terrible.
I don't even know what her politics are, but she's just like...
As conservative as you can be while being a Democrat.
That's why she's like, you know, she's a ride or die for all of these like, you know, mainstream folks, which I mean, like, you know, whatever. Those are the people who are getting jobs under Biden. I get it. But like, it's just so bizarre that like, he was like, I know just the person.
He's been trying to find her a soft landing space. He's on a big soft landing space tour at the moment. He's looking for soft landing places for a lot of... fairly mediocre to evil folks.
Yeah. I love it. Like Biden's version of soft landing is you know, nominating somebody shitty to a position, and like the Republican version is like getting them out of jail.
Right.
We are the adults in the room. So we don't get people out of jail. We just put them in.
We put them in government.
Maybe don't deserve.
But guys, she is going to be the first Asian American to head one of the three major White House policy councils in history.
Okay.
Oh, how wonderful for all of us. History being made by evil people.
I know that history, but like that history isn't as exciting when nobody likes the person. You know, like
I know.
You bring it up and you're like, oh, but not her.
Right. Yeah,
I
know. Is it great?
I say this knowing like very little about Neera Tanden other than...
Well, she's awful. You already know. Yeah. You know what you would need to know in knowing about her. She's been awful for so many years that any period of history you could find an example of her awfulness. So, let's talk a little about the Trump deposition.
Has anybody seen this video?
I have not. I have been avoiding this in the same way that I avoided the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial. I just can't give it any oxygen. I'm elated to like hear something.
I haven't watched the whole thing about the trial, but the deposition video that they showed to the jurors is out. And there was some reporting about this, like, I think back in February, like, when the deposition was taken. But, like, it's wild. And there's, like, a main takeaway that obviously everybody is, like, spiraling out of control about, where he, like, mistakes her for his own wife in a photograph.
No, first, the important thing to know is that the entire time he's saying that E. Jean Carroll is not his type. He says he says she's not his type. She tells E. Jean Carroll's lawyer that she's not his type.
And he acknowledges that he knows that he shouldn't be saying that also.
Right, exactly.
He said it about the lawyer too.
Yes. So he's going on and on about how E. Jean Carroll, not his type. And then they show him a picture of them together, and he thinks that E. Jean Carroll is Marla Maples, his ex-wife.
It's so good.
It's wild.
And the jury saw that.
Yes. Well, I mean, people with eyes had to. I was like, seen by everyone.
I know.
He gets very upset when when they ask him about the rape charge, because he says that's the worst thing you can do, the worst charge.
Yeah.
But then also there is a long...
And he's that old.
He would know. There is a very long and hilarious exchange about his frequent and often incorrect use of the word hoax. Like, they ask him extensively why he thinks everything is a hoax and what hoaxes he thinks. And he keeps going, well, a lot of hoaxes have been committed against me. I don't know. But then Trump gets asked, because he's also called voting by mail a hoax.
Sure.
And so he gets asked about that and then has to acknowledge that he has, in fact, voted by mail himself.
Right.
So there's a lot of, like, there's some punchlines. There's some, like, extended comedy. It really is a masterclass.
But the photo is everything.
The photo is everything.
I'm not watching it because I don't think I'll be entertained. That's absolutely going to happen. I'm just am trying my best to pretend he doesn't exist.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Also because he inevitably is the nominee for the Republicans in 2024, I'm going to be just fucking assaulted with this again. So
I still stand by my position that he will not be the nominee in 2024.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have a pick for who will be?
Oh, no, I have no fucking idea what's going on with
them. It's not
going
to be DeSantis. I just...
No, no. And we've been saying that since the moment someone said it could be Ron DeSantis. And then it's like how you don't... You just don't pick your nominee that early in the cycle as a front runner and have that person be the... Yeah. It's going to be someone that we haven't thought of yet or that we're like not... We don't really have our eye on. And
it'll be somebody that once we do meet them...
We'll know they're terrible.
We'll know they're terrible, but we'll also... You'll be able to know that they're a better candidate because like someone will like them. In a human sort of way.
Yes.
Which is None not of these something people. That anybody has ever said about Ron DeSantis in this life.
No.
I mean...
Nobody once.
No. So no, you can stack as many stoves as you want at that press conference. Nobody, people don't
Doesn't make
care.
It interesting.
No, doesn't make it interesting. But yeah, I think that there's going to be... That's why I think the indictment is a good thing, the Bragg indictment, because I think it's going to be too much of a liability and the Republicans are going to have to figure out how do we extricate ourselves from this without all going down with him.
Yeah.
Because in that case in particular, everyone's been guilty.
Yeah.
We all know he's guilty.
Yeah.
And so even if they never pursue any charges and it takes forever, it's going to be a drip, drip, drip of guilty forever. And he's going to take down everyone that comes in on his tent.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's
And
the
they're
going
to have to find someone who's as entertaining but less of a liability.
Is it going to be Tucker Carlson?
Oh my God.
What a world we'd be living in. Definitely could be.
It could be.
I mean, and to have a bow tie wearing president would be a real turn of events. Yeah. I feel like.
Sorry to put that thought in everybody's head. No. Let's pivot.
No, I
think people talked about
people
like,
had talked about
run
it.
For president
and also, I think it's important to have their thought in our heads now.
Yeah.
This is the time to have any thought that we don't want to have. Because if we start having those thoughts next year, we're like totally fucked.
Right. Yeah.
We're not going to be prepared.
Okay.
We need time for his badness to come
out.
So,
yeah, brace yourself
brace
for Republican nominee Tucker Carlson.
That's right. Get ready, America.
Which all you have to do is just put him on a stage with Jon Stewart and that's over in 5 minutes.
If that's the case, it's like I'm trying to think of like how many people could destroy Tucker Carlson on a stage. It's like he went, like, I know that Jon Stewart is really good at that particular kind of political comedy, but like also we're talking about a man who got destroyed by a political news, like a comedy news show host.
Yes.
Like other people can destroy Tucker Carlson too.
True. Yeah. When you're that thin skinned.
When you're that thin skinned.
Maybe not within the party.
But. Right. No, not within the party.
No.
But I mean like.
And maybe not Joe Biden. Okay. Let's move on from this topic.
Yeah, get out of here. Get out of here.
Did anyone watch The Coronation?
Not any bit of it.
The only thing I really took away from it was that there was some guy in the audience who had like giant mutton chops and a crazy looking fake hair. Yeah. And the New York Post said that Royal Stans thought it was Meghan Markle in costume trying to pretend. Like this guy looks insane and he's got like tinted glasses.
Oh, that's the content that I'm looking for about
yeah.
the
But yeah, it would,
I didn't watch any.
It would have been Meghan Markle in a fat suit. Which
oh,
I would
good.
Love.
Yeah, I mean, what a
that's
time that would be.
With the hold my attention. Otherwise, no, this is weird pageantry that I don't have time for.
Also, I'm like routinely surprised by how much attention American media and Americans in general give to British royal stuff.
I
don't fucking care about the royals.
I don't either.
Isn't the whole fun of the fact that we're like the only colony not in the Commonwealth that we don't have to care about the royals?
I know. It should. And yet, everybody watched the Crown several times. I don't care about content related
to the royals. I don't care about the actual royals. I don't care about scandals with the royals. I don't care about what British people think of the royals. I don't care what Americans think of the royals. Like,
no, I gotta say, I think people were coasting for so long on the charisma of like Diana Princess and that
yes.
whole mess.
Yes.
I think
yes.
And especially because that death was just like a monolith for that time in history. And then I think the Meghan stuff is a tenth as interesting as that, but like people latched on.
They were like looking for something to fill that void.
Because it gave them an excuse to talk about Diana again.
Yes,
that's
totally.
That's what they want to talk about. Everything else, anybody else you look at in that family is just like, ew. No.
I did see a New York Post, I think it was a New York Post headline that was something about how Charles's sausage fingers had made an appearance at the...
Oh, his fingers, yeah.
He's got bad finger issues.
I always heard like, oh, LOL, sausage fingers. And then you see a photo of them. And that's the only word you can use to describe
them. No.
Oh, my God.
Sausage fingers. Yeah.
Have
so
we
I
figured out why they're like that?
No.
I feel like I saw a link the other day.
Because
like,
that edema? Doesn't have any branches that go anywhere.
Yeah.
Just fold in on themselves.
Yeah. I think that we can assume that any abnormality that you see in the royal family tree is related to just being part of the royal family tree. I don't think that we need to worry about diagnoses.
Fair.
Yes,
I don't think he got exposed to like a chemical plant in his formative years.
That
and
is
like...
a closed system.
Yeah. And
oh boy.
like, Texas is falling apart. We only bring that information to you to remind you that we're not going to be talking about it because we're not. It's more gun violence stuff, and it's like we're not going to do anything. We're not covering any more gun violence. But it's been like a wild few weeks in Texas.
Yeah.
So that's terrible, and it's also been a wild few weeks on my cell phone receiving text messages from
Schiff campaign. I got Adam the same Schiff, one.
Who thinks that we're among his top supporters?
Yeah.
But also, that was the longest text I've ever seen.
like a full screen.
Yeah. No, not that, just a full screen. More than a full screen. Get a grip. You get those every day from Nancy Pelosi.
I'm gonna find it.
It was 100,000 screens long. It was. Yeah. You had to scroll for hours to get through it.
Look, I don't.
It had bullet points. It had emojis. It had a photo that
they always
have
come with a picture. I don't need a picture of any of the people that I'm getting a text message from. Do you not get these?
I gotta say, like, I don't want to brag and I don't want to jinx this, but like, I have not gotten any texts from Adam Schiff.
I can't believe that because I am a person who has for certain never donated one single dime to Adam Schiff and has repeatedly spoken badly about him on the internet.
Yeah.
And yet somehow I got the text about how I was one of his top supporters.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
So they are.
And it even says at the end, it says stop to quit, but then there's also like a note about like, this is an actual campaign staffer, so if you have any questions, like, feel free to ask.
Yeah.
And I had to refrain
from asking some deep questions.
Because I was like, it's a real person, like, don't be that guy. I've been that guy before.
I was gonna say, that's one of your favorite guys to be. I don't know what you're talking about. There was like an era where Brent was asking
campaign staffer just for fucking filth on a text thread.
Yeah. I feel like there was an era where you started getting texts from HRC. And you were just like, I have some questions for you. It was in our era of hating HRC when they're anti-trans, the anti-trans era of the human rights campaign.
Too, but I didn't. I don't think she ever texted.
There was an era. There was another group like that. Like, there was an era where you were doing
A lot. I had long text conversations with campaign staffers from everybody who was running for West Hollywood City Council.
Yes. Oh yeah. Asking about their positions on the sheriffs.
I was asking.
Look, I will just say, fight with those staffers now while you can, because those will all be ChatGPT within like 2 years.
That's right.
I did say something to the effect of like, I've never given Adam Schiff, you know, a single penny. But I was like, I did not.
You
refrained from being an asshole.
Right.
To a stranger on a text message.
Yeah,
Was just doing her job.
That's right.
Or their job. I don't know. Anyway. But yeah, like.
Don't send me a text that long ever.
Right?
Don't be involved in. Don't have my phone number. Lose my number forever. But. Also, I don't want to, if your text is long enough that there are bullet points inside of the text and they have blocks of text on either side of those bullet points, that's a time to think about how many words you...
That's an email.
That's an email. Thank you. That's not a text appropriate
link. We
probably
got one of those too. Thankfully, my Gmail's really good.
I sure got one of those.
Yeah.
That's...
The medium is the message, Adam Schiff.
Thank you. McLuhan to the rescue. Yeah.
He's always there.
That's the news this week.
We did it.
We'll make sure that you can follow Grant on all the things, but also any links that you want to share about how people can get involved in helping out the strikers.
Great.
We will add those to the show notes.
Yeah. And where can people find you on the internet, yourself personally?
Me? Listen, don't find me on the internet. Okay. If I'm on Twitter, I'm lurking. If I'm on Instagram, also probably lurking. find me on a picket line, because that is where I will be for the foreseeable future. Because I cannot work.
Great. Right. And we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. I won't be here next week.
Great. Good to know. I'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.